database led by Dr. Shaheen and others of and Donna McDonald, who's here in the room, on really getting a good documentation in the database of insurance status, Medicaid, and other aspects. Did you have a nuance of other insurance? Did you focus only on Medicaid this entire issue? Did you look at any Medicare or Medicare expansion insurance items? So that's one. And was there any nuance there? And then what's next for your, from these findings, what do you think the next step of research should be?
Yeah, thanks for those questions. So we did, we originally pulled data also on dual eligible patients, which are Medicare and Medicaid eligible, and due to the higher average age and the fact that that population acts more like a Medicare population, we elected to exclude those patients. So the data presented is strictly Medicaid-only patients and no dual eligibles. I think it kind of goes into your next question. I think it would be wise, in order to expand this analysis to all payer status. There's data that's published on both sides of the argument that payer status, especially Medicaid, may be either negatively impacting surgical outcomes or positively impacting surgical outcomes. And I think it would be worthwhile for us to take our analysis and expand it to more payer status than just Medicaid and the uninsured. This was kind of our first step at taking a look at how best can we evaluate current healthcare policies and whether or not our patient data supports these policies.
Dr. Viener.
Good afternoon. Very nice presentation. David Viener from Texas Children's. Can you comment at all about the potential impact of block grants, or in the case of some states, they call it disproportionate share payments to hospitals? How would that potentially impact some of these findings? Do you know if that's present in Michigan versus Virginia?
So along with the ACA and Medicaid expansion, DSH payments, the disproportionate share hospital payments, are expected to be reduced by up to 75%. So those payments currently provide funding to hospitals to recoup some of the cost of providing uncompensated care. And so I did not dive into much the financial aspects related to this, but they obviously have to be part of the conversation. In a non-expansion state, if you have not expanded Medicaid and have an opportunity to recoup that money from the federal government, because it's a joint state-federal program, and you're losing up to 75% of your DSH payments, the reimbursements to the hospitals for providing uncompensated care are going to fall off dramatically. And so from a financial standpoint, it's obviously, or for the healthcare systems, it's financially prudent to have expanded Medicaid, but the impact of these other mechanisms that provide funding for providing uncompensated care are important to consider as well.
Dr. Patterson.
Now, is a humble thoracic surgeon allowed to ask a question of a cardiac surgeon? Is that okay?
A humble thoracic surgeon happens to be the editor, yes.
So this is a terrific paper and I think an important contribution. I think I understood you to say that one of the changes that occurred in Michigan after Medicaid expansion was a reduction in the preoperative risk factors of those Medicaid patients treated surgically. But is there other factors, and that might, maybe that's the reason why the results are different, but are there other factors which are possible? For example, your group has previously reported elective cardiac operations done late in the day are bad. Late, and others have demonstrated that cardiac surgical operations done late in the week are bad. Or who did the operation? Were these Medicaid patients more likely to be operated on by junior attendings or resident physicians rather than more experienced attendings? Or can you answer any of those questions with the data that you have?
Thank you, Dr. Patterson, for that question. Now, I agree entirely. Payer status, insurance status is obviously one aspect of the delivery of healthcare, and probably does not create the entire story related to this data. However, our efforts were to include a quality collaborative in a non-expansion state as our control, so that if there were any differences between the two, we'd hope they'd play out simultaneously. I do not have the data to specifically answer some of those questions. I think those are going to be important in order to decide whether or not some of these policies are actually having the intended consequences that we expect them to. And one limitation of this data would be, if you looked at the uninsured group, their predicted risk scores went up and their outcomes were worse. So you could argue that potentially we've moved a population of younger, healthier, previously uninsured patients into this Medicaid population and brought down the risk pool, and that's why we're seeing these changes. So diving a little bit deeper into some of those findings will be included in our next steps.
Dr. Charles, excellent presentation. I certainly agree with Dr. Patterson's remarks too. And first and foremost, I do want to say a big thanks to Dr. Rich Prager, who just walked in, who has done an amazing job of coordinating our efforts in the state of Michigan. But my question to you is that during your review of the literature, this, I'm not unaware of any previous publications that have identified this. Is this precedent setting? I mean, this is a very exciting finding. Are there other publications that are able to demonstrate decreased morbidity and mortality associated with having coverage?
So from a surgical literature standpoint, this is, as far as we know, one of the first to look at the effect of expansion and seeing improved outcomes. Now, there have been some other analyses performed, especially one in, that was published in the Annals of Internal Medicine, looking at the effects of expansion on the utility and the frequency of primary care visits. But to my knowledge, in the surgical population, this is one of the first looks.
That's very exciting. My congratulations. That's
an
excellent paper.
So this is going to be an important comment from Dr. Rich, who's the past president of the STS, but
also
the past director of Medicare and CMS.
So Eric and I worked together on this paper. It was exciting, but you know, one of the confusing things for me was as we went into a Medicaid expansion state, one of my concerns, and I think we've talked about this, is that many of the younger patients who are covered now by Medicaid are going to go for a percutaneous option. And so I think that we, if we have access to the ACC database, we can probably demonstrate even better access to cardiovascular care, because the younger patients really don't want sternotomies and they're going to opt for percutaneous intervention. Eric, do you agree with that? We've talked about this for months.
Yeah, I agree. Not having complementary PCI data doesn't allow us to paint the entire picture of what's going on. And so moving forward, the Virginia Collaborative is working on this right now, and the Michigan Collaborative is, I think, a few steps ahead in combining their cardiology and PCI quality data in with their cardiac surgery data, and that's going to kind of help complete the picture.
So this is almost like what we did with the ASSERT trial, where we had linked STS data to ACC data to Medicare data.
Correct.
If we had access to a source of information like that, the findings of this study might even be more profound, it seems like.
Right, and we're in the process of linking ACC data in the state of Virginia, so we'll have STS, ACC, and CMS data, and then we'll be working with Dr. Prager to hopefully pull in ACC data into Michigan, and maybe we can give a more complete picture, you know, later with the effect on Medicaid expansion state on access to cardiovascular care in a less interventional way.
Well, I mean, that's great work and fairly groundbreaking. Eventually, it could be expanded, you know, to many more states if we can strengthen the STS-ACC linkage over time also.
Yep, I agree.
Are we ready to incorporate this in a risk model? I mean, obviously, as you're alluding to throughout your paper, is that, to dumb it down, is that we have patients that are uninsured coming for care, backtrack 5 years ago or 8 years ago, that either come late because they're not getting preventative care, they're not getting screening, and they come in with a massive MI and shock. Now they're coming in earlier with less morbidity. Do you think, from your data, we're at that point, that it's robust enough to come into a risk model?
Well, I think that's a great question, and one comment I'll make first is that in looking at our data, one of the things we had expected to see would be, or we had maybe hoped to see, would be a reduction in the rate of urgent and emergent cases in the post-expansion Medicaid population. We did not end up seeing that difference here. So to answer your question, I would say we're maybe not there just yet, and we need to take a little bit of a deeper look at some of this data. But I think the argument can be made that to take somebody from an urgent emergent status to an elective status because you've given them Medicaid insurance may be too big of a leap to make, and that's why we're seeing improvements in predicted risk scores, but not necessarily improvements in the rates of urgent and emergent cases.
That was a great question. So another view that we did, we looked at all, we have all payer data. So we have Medicare, Medicaid, commercial, and uninsured. And it was, to me, an amazing result to see that the most expensive patients were Medicare, Medicaid, and the least expensive patients were commercial and uninsured. The uninsured patients had the same cost profile as the commercial patients. And it was because the uninsured were a lot younger, and they didn't have all the comorbidities that the Medicare and Medicaid patients had. So it's just more food for thought, but I think it's an interesting, you know, further analysis.
Yeah, it comes to mind just the endocarditis population that's rapidly expanding. I mean, this is a sweet spot for like a subset analysis just looking at endocarditis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are a few of those populations that are probably well represented in the uninsured and Medicaid group, and taking a closer look at how providing Medicaid insurance in an expansion state to some of those groups makes a difference would be worthwhile.